This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Derek and Zach. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at NorthtownAuto.com.
Snap is down. Hold is up. Kick is up. And it is good. Ray Davis, your emergency kicker, with a successful PAT.
Good morning, everybody.
Yeah, I'm going to let you do that from now on. I did it once and it felt weird.
I got what I wanted out of the preseason. I'm good. We can wrap the games up. Chris Brown there on the call. I got what I wanted out of the preseason. I didn't think it would happen. After talking with Sal that morning, I thought, you know what? They got to work out their kicker. They don't want to put Ray Davis in danger, what have
you. It's running back one as of right now. Like, not a good idea.
And then I got it done early.
And you know that was for the, that was just for the, I guess you could say it was for the kicks.
Loved it. I loved it so much. And I didn't know what was happening. I looked away because, like, they're doing the PAT, what have you. And maybe it was you that said something or somebody had said something. So we all looked at the TV.
Yeah.
I had so much fun with that.
Yeah. And that was exclusively for fun.
Yep.
Sean McDermott.
Downplayed it a little bit.
Where he downplayed it, but he also got, like, honestly, let's be real about it. He got too many questions about that.
He did. That and the James Cook situation, he was about done.
He's like, I'm done talking about Ryan running backs. We're done here.
Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. The Bills preseason is officially underway. They had their first game and their only home game of the preseason done and over with on Saturday. They fall to the New York Giants 34-25. The final score kind of doesn't matter. There were, though, some pretty good takeaways to get from this. Not end-all, be-all kind of definitive statements. It is still, of course, preseason. And, you know, Derek, I'll tell you now, maybe my favorite takeaway was actually in that post-game press conference. Matt Bove asked the question to McDermott about how much, like, do they game plan for these teams? Like, how much do they really dig deep, look at film, the whole thing for these games? And McDermott got about as close to saying 0% as he could. It's like, it's all about feel. It's, I want to see how these guys react, what have you. That also led me to kind of, you know, take a step back from the game. The All-22 I have not seen has been out yet, so we haven't been able to do like a huge deep dive on the game. But I really like that answer because I think it just more and more proves that there's only so much you're going to take from a preseason game. And what you can take away from it is individual performances. Not an entire unit and how they did, but how did a player look and what have you. And that for me were my big take was, especially leaving Saturday into yesterday and kind of like, you know, marinating with the game, rewatching some of the clips and stuff like that. That's where I came away with was very specific players. We can dive into the defense and how they were really not good on third down. And if you want to add in fourth downs, they were even more horrendous in terms of actual percentages on that. They didn't get any sacks, even though I think there was like 51 passing attempts for the Giants. That's not ideal. But looking at a player-by-player basis, there were some pretty good takeaways from this game, or at least things that you can get excited to watch, to keep an eye on as the preseason goes on. Because the time now at St. John Fisher is over with. That ended last week going into the Giants game. Now we're into the more, okay, now we're going to lock it down. Everyone's back at Orchard Park. They are going to have a joint practice this week against Chicago later in the week. But now I think a lot of us have very specific players we're keeping an eye on. I heard Joe DiBiase talking about Curtis Samuel a lot and really what is his future on the roster. No clue. Guys like Tyrell Shavers continue to kind of show out. There were some things that you could take away from this game. Now, I don't think whole unit stuff, but definitely player to player.
Yeah, and I do think that it also has to do with the fact that in the preseason, you know that the schemes are going to be bland. So what you want to see is some high-end plays or showcases of high-end talent in those flashes that you're going to see from these young players.
Mm-hmm.
Or from, obviously, any veteran additions as well. You just want to see the athleticism and the playmaking ability there for you. things that scheme can't dictate. For example, TJ Sanders getting around his man and crushing Jackson Dart, and Dart more impressively standing in the pocket and delivering a dot. Deion Walker with the move that he makes to have a pass deflection. Or anything of the sort like that. Jordan Hancock running instinctively down the field from a safety position. You want to see things like that. Tyrell Shavers getting down the field, getting open.
Yep.
You want to see things that scheme is not going to dictate and play calling is not going to dictate. It's the athleticism. Can I see the high-end plays being made? Because that's the thing that you can take away from it. That's what you can take away. I can look at that and go, that's why you got drafted. That's why this team brought you in. That's why you got signed.
And on that, I mean, you bring up TJ Sanders, Deion Walker. I did see the PFF scores for what they're worth about this game. Deion Walker was the highest rated Bills pass rusher. I think he had like two pressures on there. You mentioned up the pass deflection, stuff like that. TJ Sanders, we mentioned the Jackson Dart play. It's a great throw by Dart, and that is the play of the game, I think, just as a whole if you're looking at it nationally. But Sanders, to make that move, to get in there, that's kind of what you want to see. And if you're a Bills fan, that's also what you want to see, is the two of the three young defensive linemen were out there making plays relatively early in the game, for what it's worth. And it's the thing, too, again, for what it's worth and who it's against, what have you. But that's what you wanted to see. You made those additions. And I'm not even bringing up Joey Bosa, who looked great in the run game. And he kind of looked like a guy that after one series, you're like, cool, wrap him in bubble wrap. We'll see you at week one.
Yeah.
We're done. You don't need to play anymore. Same with Matt Milano.
Do your thing with practices, him and Milano. I don't need to see him in anything live anymore for the rest of the preseason. And I think many fans will agree on that, especially because, well, if you're going to see them, it's going to be what? On Saturday? You're not playing him in the third game.
No, probably not.
Starters aren't touching the field in that third game.
No.
They're not even putting on a jersey.
Yeah, especially, well, I mean, we talked about it too, especially with the lack of cutdown days.
Yeah.
The roster's big enough to where, yeah, it's all the backups playing week three.
Yeah.
Just get them out there. We're trying to just wrap this up kind of deal. So, I mean, yeah, there was enough, I think, to take away from this to be excited. I'm just happy now, finally, to get some game reps, especially with the new defensive pieces. Just to see them in action, especially for many of us who haven't been able to actually get to camp and see that on a regular basis, that was nice. We didn't even mention Michael Hoyt, who got to play a little bit longer in the game. I think that's him and Ogunjobi. I think mainly due to the fact of, you guys won't be here for 6 weeks. We're going to get your reps now because the younger guy's going to take more of the lion's share.
Yeah, they're going to take more of the share in these next two games to get them more ready for when it goes live, live.
I was happy to see a lot of that stuff. And for them to look good. Again, they didn't get a sack, though, in those 51 pass attempts, passing downs. But there were splash plays. There was enough there that I could get excited about, especially if you're looking at the run defense. They held the Giants to 3.2 yards per carry. That's pretty good. There were also some missed performances. Landon Jackson, kind of the only time I noticed him was when he took away a Jordan Hancock interception.
On lining up off sides, yeah.
That's really the only time I knew he was there. Elijah Moore was quiet. There is a play. I want to see the all 22. There was a play, the Dalton Kincaid catch on third down.
Third Moore, and 15.
Yeah, Moore's running wide open, it looked like.
Moore's getting sticks.
Mm-hmm.
And he's open. But Trubisky probably doesn't see him in time, which is normal considering how well Abdul Carter played in that game.
Yeah, looking back at that play, too,
like you understand,
he kind of had to get the ball out quick.
You understand why he didn't get to that read, because of the fact that the Giants' pass rush was just kind of getting overwhelming. And especially for a backup quarterback that knows, like, especially Trubisky through his career, we know what he is. You know, there's going to be mistakes made. And he's probably thinking at this moment, I'm in a quarterback competition. I can't make that mistake.
Mm-hmm.
I see Kincaid. Pressure's coming. I don't have any more time.
Yeah, just get rid of the ball.
And it did look like he had another fraction of time if he wanted to make that look, but how confident are you in getting that ball to the intermediate versus the short check down?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to see it? Yes. Do I expect QB1 to get that done? Probably. Did Dalton Kincaid kind of make the most of that rep? Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Got like 11 or 12 yards on a third and 15.
Could be happy with that.
You could be happy about the fact that Kincaid bullied his way and tried to get the first down.
Mm-hmm.
I saw some people getting worried about Trey White, and I'm like, whoever cornerback two is, they're going to get picked on all year. I don't need to cause that to be anything of concern. He was letting, and this is where, again, vanilla schemes in preseason, Trey White was like 7 yards off the ball every play except every for like play. Two.
Yeah.
And he was with his guy on those two. If you want to be concerned about something, it's the one play where Giants get 11 yards on the play. White's there to make the tackle, but he gets taken for a ride.
He gets dragged about 4 more yards.
He gets four. Yeah, it's pretty much like about a 7 yard gain, and then it turns into 11.
Mm-hmm.
That's a play where you're like, okay, you want that one back. But I'm not going to really get too nitpicky over a preseason game, nor am I going to get too high about it either. I do think that if you see something in a preseason game that validates what you're seeing in camp, it's a little bit of a confirmation bias. Yes, but it also shows consistency.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Milano.
Yeah.
We've been seeing it all throughout from the beat reporters. Matt Milano looks like he's back. And what did you see first play? Closes immediately, stops a play from even getting off the ground. Matt Milano looks back. He looks fresh. That is something that you see from camp, and you then see it there, and you're like, okay, that's interesting. The quarterbacks have been, from what we saw, relatively on par with each other. That's the report from camp. Guess what? We saw that with White and Trubisky. We saw that. Tyrell Shavers having himself a good camp. What's he do?
Continue
pops
that.
Pops open for a 58-yard gain. Obviously, you would have liked to see him finish the deal on that one. That would have been cool.
Mm-hmm.
But there was really good closing speed from the corner on that after he got beat. Ball's a good ball, though. It's just not fast enough. And then you also have other things, like the bad side of it, but you don't react strongly one way or another yet. Elijah Moore was quiet. That's not ideal. Landon Jackson was quiet. It's not ideal. That doesn't mean it is what it is. And that can go for all the positives. It doesn't mean that it is what it is.
I was going to say, even for the quiet guys too, Ray Davis. Four carries, 7 yards. And that right now is your starting running back with the hold in from James Cook.
Yeah, if you want to overreact from a preseason game, you say Ty Johnson running back one, James Cook who?
Yeah.
Because Johnson looked very impressive. But again, it's one game. Not only is it one game, it's one preseason game.
Mm-hmm.
All the players that took part in this game did not play the full game. So they have limited reps. Trust in what the Bills coaches are seeing and how they're deploying them in the games, because the practice reps are far more bountiful and numerous.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number to call. You want to jump on today's show. Your thoughts on preseason game number one for the Bills. You did mention Tyrell Shavers there, though.
Yes.
And
I
want to talk about him just because the wide receiver room was always, it felt like, kind of an open competition, mainly due to the fact of how the Bills played. Everyone eats. There was always that feeling that a random guy could get reps. It's why many of us got excited about Elijah Moore or even Curtis Samuel last year. Josh Palmer this year as well. Keon Coleman. The list goes on and on and on. Shavers has found his way into that, and he just kind of continues to be a guy that makes plays. I heard Jeremy and Joe bringing this up today too. Is really the thing he has to work on special teams? Because Virgil had more special team snaps than Shavers did on Saturday. And it may be true, and especially if you're competing for what is likely going to be wide receiver number five. But I do continue to walk away very impressed with Shavers. It's not just the deep bomb that he catches from Trubisky. The moment he's in the game, I think it is Trubisky. Yeah, Trubisky also throws this one.
Yep.
Where it's a slant pattern, but it goes for like 12 yards. It's a first down. It's easy. He looks the part. He's 6'4", 211. I don't think he's going to be a world beater. That's not it. But, mentioning on the pregame over the weekend too, there is going to be a spot for somebody to get like 20, 25 catches that you maybe don't know of yet or maybe haven't thought of too much yet, because that's how they want to play offense. They want to spread the ball around. And when I look at guys like Curtis Samuel, not really hitting yet. You know, Keon Coleman, we're not sure on the consistency. KJ Hamler, kind of an unknown. Laviska Shenault, what does he do outside of the return game? We don't really know. I'm starting to really wonder about Tyrell Shavers maybe being somewhat of a fixture on the offense because he continues to make plays. He continues to look pretty darn good.
It's a consistency thing, and you want to see it through how he ended his season last year with the big explosive play. Now he's having a solid camp. He's putting those practices together. You put it a little together, you get the consistency, and you try to make it pay off.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing you want to look for in the preseason is can you string those together through the couple of games that you play through very limited reps? You're not getting a lot of snaps. You're not getting a huge snap share. It's just not happening. The best snap share you got was probably what? Dorian Strong, Jamarcus Ingram at the end of the game, just getting all
back
those reps.
Backup corners, yeah, where it's like you have to play. We're a little bit limited. The safety's probably the same thing. We're a little bit limited there. You're going to have to play
quite
a bit. And that's where you also saw Jordan Hancock. He did a lot on Saturday. Yeah, so that's probably where you're going to get it. The wide receivers maybe a little bit less so. And it's, again, where I like Shavers is that he, in his limited moments, I mean, that's the thing now. In the last few games Bills fans have of Shavers, he's made two huge plays.
Right.
You have the breakaway touchdown against New England, then you have this 58-yard catch on Saturday. So he's done enough for a lot of Bills fans to have a feeling about him that is more than positive.
And
he's not a name that came up a lot in terms of who's going to be the preseason like camp hero and stuff like that. He might be that guy.
And I'm not sure if it's because of the fact that he was on the roster last year and he does have a touchdown to his name like within the regular season, but maybe that's why. It's because of the fact that he's already here. He's already been here.
Mm-hmm.
And people are like, okay, he's already here. How's he going to be a camp hero if he's already here?
Yeah.
Well, this is how. But then you see Andreessen looking the part, and that's something that was coming from camp. And validated by the Bills themselves when they released Baylen Specter wave injured.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a reason they're able to do that as well. It's because they know what they have now at linebacker two.
Yeah.
Behind Terrell Bernard. They can do it because. Yeah.
Andreessen.
You can get away with it now.
Andreessen is fun too. He looks like he belongs in run defense. I mean, just flat out. He sets the edge well. He's kind of where the ball is every time, it felt like. The only thing now for him, especially as a backup middle linebacker, how are you in coverage? I think that's kind of the last thing we've sort of got to figure out with Andreessen.
Yes, because if Bernard's out for a certain amount of snaps even in a game.
And he did miss time last year. I mean,
he missed time last year. He missed games last year.
Mm-hmm.
But can you get by? And it looks like you can be a little bit more confident in Andreessen helping get you by.
Yeah.
Which is a big deal. And this comes from not just one game. It is through last season making the team as an undrafted free agent. This is hearing the reports in camp that he has been solid.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the consistency thing. You want to see more players be able to make some noise, but don't get too high. Don't get too low. That's how the preseason pledge goes. That's how we're supposed to swear it every year.
It just gets a little hard when like certain players pop off or disastrous.
Yeah, it's the extremes, like one major or the other, and it's like, okay, guys, right. everyone, people, settle it down. But you do want to try to take things away.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it is, am I seeing pop plays from players with their athleticism? Am I seeing smart, instinctual plays from somebody that tells me that they're a safe bet to make this roster?
Mm-hmm.
What am I seeing that correlates with the camp reports that we're getting? Can those go hand in hand, or are they flying in the face of something? Are the lights too bright?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you just legitimately a game day guy?
I feel like that,
that's the thing.
The gamer thing, too, is always – that's a frustrating one because with preseason especially, you have to marry the two.
Exactly.
Of camp and games. And so if you're somebody that we're hearing, he's not really doing much in practice, but the game time rolls around, especially in the preseason. Was it in the third and fourth quarter? Or was it they're in the first quarter against the starters or the limited amount that there are, and they're doing this? There is going to have to be a kind of uncomfortable marriage with that because it is so difficult to get anything from this. There will be guys who pop off the entire preseason, Trey Lance for the Chargers, and you won't hear about them for the entire year.
obvious reasons.
For obvious reasons, but you know, he's just an example. But there will be a wide receiver that looks awesome in preseason. How is he not starting on any given team? And you won't hear about them until the last game of the season where a bunch of guys are sitting.
Or sometimes ever again.
Or sometimes ever again. It does happen very regularly. It's why we talk about preseason and camp heroes. So that's where it's got to be the marriage between the two. And you've talked about it with deployment. You know, where are guys? We know Andreessen has been the backup middle linebacker. So watching his development is with much more interest because we know Bernard has missed some games. You already have the story involved with Andreessen, and now we're starting to see the practice and game time stuff is looping together and building up. Shavers is a little bit more uncomfortable. We don't totally know where he's been deployed within the Bills' practice schedules. We do know there's been receivers that have been out with injuries, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's been with the ones.
And to make that further point, you worry about a player's spot on their roster based on their deployment in game three. The fact that there were players playing in that fourth quarter on Saturday, those are not cut candidates yet or right away. There are some obvious ones. Like, obviously, I'm pretty sure that Shane Buechele is very locked into not being a backup quarterback.
It's okay. It's fine.
But
we're just happy he was here.
Tyrell Shavers was not playing in the fourth quarter, for example, though.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean one thing or another for, say, Dorian Strong and Jamarcus Ingram.
Mm-hmm.
They may be fighting against each other for a spot, for example. You give them the reps and all the reps that they need.
Yeah.
Or it's Tecori Couch playing late in that fourth quarter. What I look at, though, is who are the next ones up after the starters went?
That's what you
Shavers.
Keep on. Yeah. Hamler. Moore, I think, was out there.
Strong
as well,
and Jackson.
Yep.
Hancock.
Mm-hmm.
Those are things you need to write down in your mind. Like, okay, let's see here. That's who that was. Okay. And you figure it out from there. Davidson was the first tight end. Davidson struggled. Davidson had a bad day. Jackson Hawes drops his only pass.
The only target. And it's playing catch.
Yeah.
It's tough.
So, not a great day for tight end threes, but, you know, that's also tight end three. Keonta Jenkins is the next guy up instead of Ed Ulufashio.
Mm-hmm.
That's not good.
Yep, and I know Sal's brought up his name. Eddie Ulufashio is potentially a cut candidate. He's only he's a draft pick from a few years ago, but, yeah, he's one of those guys, later round guys. We'll see what happens. Let's get connected to our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. 803-0550, the number to call if you want to give your thoughts today on preseason game number one for the Bills. We'll start today off with Mike on the line. Mike, how are we doing today?
Good, thank you. I guess my complaint, and this is, I get it, it's preseason football. You can't take too much from it. I mean, all the same old cliches.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of emblematic of, I think, what has plagued this defense through the Josh Allen era, and why they can't get to that next level, is the third down inefficiency. You can go back to Leslie Frazier. I mean, and some of this has got to be on the head coach. Some of the responsibility has got to be on the head coach for this. But this third down, and I don't know what's going on and why they can't fix this. But if this continues like it has, like I said, through the Josh Allen era, I just don't see this team getting to the next level.
Yeah, Mike, thanks for the call. This was something we talked about on the post game on Saturday, too, and to a negative extent, like Shavers. Mm-hmm. What are the memories you have of him from last year into this year? It's the big touchdown against New England. Into this year, he gets another big pass play, right? This is that negative aspect of the third down defense was not good last year.
Yeah.
And we came into Saturday and the Giants go 9 of 19.
If you add the last time you saw them.
Yeah. And if you add the fourth downs, by the way, they went 2 for 2 on that. So really, in terms of conversions and keeping drives going, they were 11 of 19.
Which is terrible.
The Bills, by the way, on offense were 1 of 9 on third downs. So they themselves were also not great.
I mean, you have your third down problem solver not suiting up.
Right.
I'm going to not be shocked if the Bills go 1 of 9 on third downs.
When Trubisky or Mike White or Shane Buechele are your quarterbacks.
Like, I'm okay with that. I understand. But the defense, it is a little bit of pattern recognition
mm-hmm.
and confirmation bias. Again, positive or negative. Schemes in preseason are meant to be vanilla as all heck. But would you like to see a play every now and then? Yeah. You don't want them converting on ultimately 11 of 19 third or fourth downs. Moving the chains like that,
mm-hmm.
you should say, in later down conversion rates, you don't want to see that. No matter how bland the scheme is, you do want someone to make a play. And that's where I look at the defensive end depth and go, where are you?
And that's why they added so much in the offseason. I think you can look at the screens. The screens is its own other demon. That's something as well.
Death, taxes, and the Bills
but those
being damaged by screens.
But those third and long situations, that is why you drafted TJ Sanders and traded up for him in the second round. It's why you added another guy in the fourth round in Deion Walker. It's why you also drafted a high potential, you know, high-end athlete in Landon Jackson. They need to get home on these third downs, on these passing situations. They need to get home. There were also a lot of third and shorts because of, well, they were picking on Trey White to the side. He was, you know, 5-6 yards off the line of scrimmage. But
even
I think,
the starters,
I think it is fair, though, to walk away and go, man, is third downs really still going to be a problem? I think it's fair.
Even then, the starters do ultimately force a field goal. And then they're done for the day.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the Giants get down the field.
They didn't look great, though, the whole way there.
They didn't look great the whole way, but guess what? They did what they usually do. Bend, don't break.
But
fine. You're also not facing Malik Nabers.
You're also not facing Malik Nabers, and to be fair, this whole bend, don't break thing has gotten you killed in the playoffs.
It's gotten you killed in the playoffs. I'm not worried about it for the first preseason game, which is, can you limit from 6 going on the board? All right, cool. Get out.
803-0550, the number to call. Your takeaways from game number one of the Bills preseason. We'll also read some of your tweets as well. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, and this is WGR.
Holy smokes. I got a shot.
He just kicked a 70-yard field goal. Are you kidding me?
Crazy.
I've never seen that, the NFL record. That would be an NFL record.
Holy smokes.
That's unbelievable.
Jacksonville Jaguars kicker Cam Little. 70-yard field goal to close out the first half. Only problem? Doesn't count in the record books. It's a preseason game. As much as we'll keep stats for the preseason, does not count. And to that point, Glenn tweets in, none of this matters if a 70-yard field goal doesn't count. NFL really needs to be like college. Cut the preseason, add the regular season games the NFL is craving, and this is maybe controversial, go so we can have the Super Bowl in March. I think that's a bit too long.
Unless he's saying push the schedule.
Well, he's also saying get rid of the preseason games, which
I think he's saying like
we're
starting now. Like we're starting at the middle of August or we start in September
to
add it. Yeah.
You know,
to
push it to March, you're starting in September.
You're still starting in September. We're just going long in camp with no games, and then we just add those games on.
But long in camp means you're starting in August and not July.
Ugh. I just don't want the Super Bowl in March. By the end of the season, I think we're all kind of just we're drained. It's a lot of we're even, you know, guilty of it too. It's a lot of talk all the time. It kind of takes over your life. By the end, you're like, okay, I'm really glad it's one game left. And then 2 weeks later, you're like, I'm ready for football to begin. But
I don't know.
I don't know about Super Bowl in March. That's
Oh, here we go. We got classic preseason overreaction on ESPN here. Are the Giants already being slept on?
Oh, what are you talking about? Abdul Carter looking like a menace. Jackson Dart in the face of danger drops an absolute beauty to Hook'em Horns, little Jordan Humphrey. I mean, I understand it.
This is what's wrong with this country.
The Super Bowl March thing, though, really does. The NFL won't want that simply for the fact of they lose all of their draft coverage.
Yeah.
Like, they would have everything still ultimately be the same. You'd still be covering them for all of February and all of March, but they'd have to go right into draft coverage, or would they do kind of what the NBA does, where, like, the combine's, like, around the end of the season? And no, they're not going to do that. The NFL loves to space everything out.
the NFL loves being a 12-month league.
Yeah, rather than we're going to clump our two biggest things, obviously the season and then the draft, together. They're not going to want
to. But most of what that man is saying is right, though. Like, add that 18th game, get rid of the preseason.
Let's ride.
And let's just go.
The Jaguars are going to try to get Cam Little that record, aren't they?
I don't know.
Now that they know he's got it, and
you
can't necessarily hear it in that clip, but he had about 5 more yards to give on that.
I don't know about that. I think he was at his limit.
I think they're going to try, though. And the thing is, that's a dangerous weapon, too, if you can cross the 50 and essentially be in field goal range.
Yeah.
It's a dangerous way. At least to try.
Especially how touchbacks are.
At least to try, yes. And with what touchbacks are, at least to try, that's a dangerous weapon. They're going to try to get him the record. Now that they know he's got it in his wheelhouse, they should.
I don't know about should. You have, like, there is evidence of it existing.
Mm-hmm.
That is there. It's just not in the record book.
Well, I'm saying they should, in the sense of, instead of punting, because it's, fourth and eight, and it's going to be like a 70-yard field goal, try it.
Why do you think they're trying it, though, Zach?
Well, it's preseason. They want to see if he's got it.
It's preseason, and also it's the kick before the end of a half.
Yeah. So at that point, try it.
That kind of
situation. If they're in a situation again, they'll try it.
That's the thing. The situation has to dictate that. But if there's more than like 2 seconds left on the clock, like say there's 10 seconds left, you're not trying it. You want to know why? There's a run back opportunity. Or you miss it, the other team could now just flip the field and do the same thing. Quite literally, you would have battling field goals.
I mean, that's coaching scared as hell then. That is coaching so scared.
What do you think NFL coaches do?
I don't disagree, but that's like almost cowardly. I know my kicker's got this, but I'm really scared they might return this in a 1 in a million play. So we're not going to try this.
Or
if that happened, I'd be – and it's Liam Cohen, it's a young guy.
I'd probably say it has to do more with, if we miss this, they can turn around and kick the field goal anyway. And it's not 70 yards. We're losing that battle. That's why I don't think it would happen.
I want them to try it again. He's got it in his wheelhouse, and it was comfortably made. They can do it again. 803-0550, the number to call. Your takeaways from game number one of the preseason. Jonathan tweets in, shaver season loading. What is the season going to be for him? Let's say right now he makes the roster, he's wide receiver 5. But what would then be a great season for him? I'm not sitting here going he's going to be the Victor Cruz, right? I brought him up a lot as that sort of preseason camp hero, what have you, for the Giants. He popped off. He found himself in the preseason. I don't think that's a thing that's going to happen.
Correct.
But like 20, 25 catches, being a guy that's out there, pretty good at blocking, they can actually throw him out there regularly and get good reps from him. That's good. He's part of that young receiver core as well. They really don't have an old wide receiver. And we are all sitting here wondering, what is Curtis Samuel on this roster? And his position is somewhat oversaturated with a lot of guys that can do his role.
Yeah, and that's kind of where you get into this problem of, like, maybe you're not a cut candidate necessarily based on your contract, but could you be unloaded to a team that is in need of some wide receivers and you can sell them on, hey, can we do a pick swap? I'll give you Curtis Samuel.
I think that's becoming more and more likely.
It's more and more likely because why do the Bills need to worry about having Samuel on this team if they have Shavers and Hamler and
Moore
and Elijah Moore?
Well, and that's the thing, too. Cheaper option, and we bring up the Moore play. They go back to the film room. If he is wide open and nailed it and Mitch just didn't get the ball, that's a plus to Moore. It's not a negative, oh, you didn't get the ball, so it doesn't count. That's a plus in the film room. That matters to these guys. And for Samuel, again, it's just there is no real positives. Now, we brought up with Shavers and we brought up with the defense on negative ends. Samuel, when he was healthy at the end of the year, actually started to look like the guy you gave a 3-year deal to.
Right.
But again, he's not healthy. And unlike Cole Bishop, who's a drafted player, you don't really have the room in the safety room to be like, you know what, screw it, we're just going to move on. You have room in the wide receiver room.
And oddly enough, with all the injuries that happened at wide receiver in camp, there were a lot more of them available to them in the preseason game than the secondary.
Yep.
Oddly enough, that's not an accident at that point.
Yep.
So you pay attention to those things.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number to call. We'll start this segment off with Tom on the line. Tom, how are we doing?
I'm pretty good. How are you guys doing?
Doing well, doing well.
Okay, so I watched the whole game on Saturday afternoon, and I have some observations. I mean, I know it was preseason. I know that we're going to give away our offense, and I'm really not talking about the offense at all. I've got some things that concern me, like lining up in a neutral zone and going out of bounds without being pushed out. Those are the kind of things that should be drummed into the heads of those people. And I've seen a lot of it last year during the regular season, and then we see it again. I also noticed in the, especially in the first quarter, and then maybe I didn't notice it as much, where slips on the field.
Yeah.
With guys trying to make a turn, and they just feet went out from under them. Do we have a problem with a worn-out rug or something? I mean, these kind of things lead to soft tissue injuries. That's a concern to me. And like the previous caller, we were just playing awful on third down and then even fourth down convert stops. They got almost every time. What were they at, 75%?
Yeah, they were 11 of 19 if you combine the fourth and third down conversions. I mean, it was a ridiculous pop. Tom, thanks for the call. On the field thing, though, too.
That's a good
– We brought that up when we were just hanging out together watching the game, getting ready for halftime and then postgame. Mm-hmm. We were both like – And it was for both teams.
It was catching a lot of people.
Like, what is going on?
Yeah, I would look into the
go away. I didn't remember bringing it up a lot after maybe the first quarter. I would still look into it. But yeah, look into it.
I would still look into it. Make sure you got proper turf for week one against Baltimore.
I do.
There were a lot of slips from both teams, though. It's like it's enough to wear. It's noteworthy.
Mm-hmm.
It's pointed out.
It did absolutely happen. The lining up in the neutral zone. Landon Jackson talking about someone getting positives in the film room. That'll be. Negative.
That's going to be, you look away.
I mean, I tweeted out rookie on rookie crime. That's a big play from Hancock. He was right where he needed to be. By the way, continuing a really good day from Jordan Hancock. Him is, the safeties maybe in general is who I'm most excited to see what the All-22 shows. Because safety, you do not get a lot of on the actual television broadcast. There's much more for the film stuff. But Hancock seemed to be almost everywhere you wanted him to be. That pick was great for him. And it's taken away because Landon Jackson lines up in the neutral zone.
Which
that was kind of the only
second
thing
that day.
Yeah.
Ed Oliver also does it in the first quarter.
Right,
so
right.
So it's like, guys, you can't be doing that.
Don't be pulling the D-Ford. Don't do it. Don't do it.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was going. The D-Ford mention. Like, yeah, I guess the Kansas City Chiefs turned their fortunes around after that play, but man, they did not get to a Super Bowl because.
Yeah, never forget. D-Ford made
D-Ford
sure that we
lined up
to,
in the neutral zone.
We didn't have to deal with more
of the Chiefs.
I think, was it an interception or just a fourth down stop?
It was either way. Like, it was a turnover.
Yeah, it was a turnover, and that ends it.
And it ends the game, except it doesn't.
Third down stuff, though, I can fully understand anyone being any sort of discouraged. Because, I was too, because that was a continuation from last year.
It's
they were
the last
not
thing
a
you
great
saw.
Third down defensive team. It's why they added so much to the defensive line. It's not just the rookies. It is also Bosa and Hoyt and Ogunjobi. They need those guys to get home. I think it's also why, and Sal's brought this up a lot when we've talked with them and everyone else on the station has talked to them, that they have been going away a little bit from that zone-heavy system to more man coverage. They've got to get home, though. They also have to get way better at defending screens. That's not just a preseason thing. That is a Bills defense
that
they don't do particularly well against screen passes.
The screen pass thing, like, come on. Can
I wish I could find any numbers on a successful screen run against the Bills defense. It feels like it's 90% of the time.
It feels like it's like 90% of the time it works every time. Like, yeah, I also wonder what a screen pass looks like in practice. Because the Bills are not particularly good at running them themselves.
That might be the biggest problem. That might be the problem, Derek. I think
is it that the defense is so bad that the offense thinks that they're good at it?
No, I think it's the opposite. The offense is so bad at it, the defense thinks they nailed it, and then they go and run it in a game, and they're like, oh, we've been fooled. We've been bamboozled.
The chicken and the egg conversation with Bills in the screen game.
Yeah.
Every screen
once
burns again,
though, my insides.
Pass rush needs to be married to its coverage, and I'm bringing this one back. From last year, please don't file for a divorce.
803-0550, the number to call. John, if you hang on the line, we'll get to you after this quick timeout. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, and this is WGR.
Welcome
Zagwag, everyone. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Wrapping up hour number one on a beautiful Monday, although it is expected to get very hot, so do be drinking water if you're going to be outside a lot today. I know it also got super, super hot. A little bit of a heat advisory warning on Saturday as well.
Yeah, there was a heat advisory from Highmark Stadium, actually. Mm-hmm. So, you know, hopefully everyone drank enough water, stayed cool. You get to do it again today. The elite season is coming. Hold strong.
Hold strong. 803-0550, the number to call. Let's go back to the phones here. John is with us. John, you're on WGR. How are we doing, man?
Good morning, man. How are you guys doing?
Doing well.
Question for you guys. I heard you talk about Super Bowls and everything. I thought the NFL should, you know, throw a loop in there and have the Super Bowl in a cold game. Have it in the Green Bay, Buffalo, Pittsburgh. You know, start something new. They're starting to have more and more international games, primetime games. It would be great to have an outdoor game in the elements playing football.
John, totally understand that. I'm totally with you on that to a certain extent. The problem is, once the Super Bowls have now gotten big, you are hosting an event. This is why, even with the talks of the new Bills Stadium, like make it a dome, you'll bring a Super Bowl here?
Nope.
No. Buffalo.
Infrastructure.
Yeah, Buffalo, Green Bay, they simply don't have the infrastructure. And in terms of the outside stuff, I know it's fun and cool because like the historical aspect, they make for pretty bad games and bad viewing experiences for a lot of people as well. For every Green Bay and Buffalo fan that loves, you know, being out in the elements, the cold, what have you.
The casual doesn't.
The casual doesn't. You remember 2014, the Super Bowl was in New York for Denver and Seattle. It wasn't a particularly good game. And also, you do typically want to see the teams at their best. Denver wasn't highly explosive offense, and they were playing in very, very cold temperatures. And if that happened to snow that week and it was a snow game, it looks beautiful. I'm not denying that. I think everyone loves the aesthetic of a snow game or even a weather game. But here, perfect example. We're Bills fans here. If all of a sudden it was snowing so much that Josh Allen couldn't throw the ball in a Super Bowl and that became the reason why they lost, they have won games, San Francisco here in Buffalo last year. They also could lose those games in equal measure. And that's how you want to lose is because the NFL wanted to change it up and have a little more fun. No, it's why they go to domes.
They went to it one time.
And that was it. And they've left it
that's
at that.
That's it. Because, ready? Minnesota, it's a dome.
Yeah.
Detroit, it's a dome.
Yep.
They did it one time and they thought to themselves, yeah, we're good.
No
actually,
more of that.
We'll give New Orleans its 11th game.
And it's also where you see, too, like Jacksonville's only gotten the one. In 05, Tampa is sort of almost notorious now for the 06 Super Bowl where it was a monsoon. Sort of the same thing. Peyton Manning goes in for that Super Bowl, and it's two of the three Super Bowls he was in was somewhat of a weather factor, either being cold when he was with Denver, or two of the four, excuse me, I forgot. Mm-hmm. He does make another one eventually. But two of the four, he's got the Tampa Bay kind of gross game, and then he has the New York kind of cold-ish weather game. They're going to keep it, for the most part, domes. You know, it's New Orleans, it's Los Angeles, it's Arizona, Houston. I'm surprised Dallas only has one, by the way, 2011. I'm a little surprised by that.
Considering Jerry Boy?
Yeah, kind of. Like, you would assume that he would want, like, that spectacle. And again, you also look at some of the cold weather cities that have gotten it with the domes. You know, Minneapolis has the infrastructure. Indianapolis holds a lot of conventions. They host the Combine. They have the infrastructure to get it done. Detroit, sort of the same thing. Buffalo, Green Bay, they don't.
Even then, Indy hasn't gotten it since 2012.
Right, so it's been a long time
It's been a long time for them. It's been 1 year longer for Dallas. But what they do seem to do is they like to go back to Santa Clara, Atlanta, Miami, New Orleans.
Mm-hmm. And this year, by the way, it is going to be in San Francisco.
And Inglewood gets the next one, and then Atlanta.
Yep. Now, it can be annoying if you're a big college football fan, because boy, oh boy, do you see these same stadiums over and over and over again in any of the big games,
right?
Not even just the national championships, the bowl games, and even these preseason kind of big matchups on neutral sites. 803-0550, the number.
Possibility means you have a chance.
Passion opens the door to all possibilities.
When I feel like anything's possible, I feel kind of giddy.
I want to be an astronaut,
an artist,
an actress.
To visit another country.
All I need is a backpack and a pair of shoes and I'll find a way.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
I've never felt like more things are possible than right now.
In the right shoes, anything's possible.
DSW, countless shoes at bragworthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
For to call your takeaways from game number one of the preseason, could be Bills Giants if you also had something else like a 70-yard field goal that's not going to count in the regular books. We'll absolutely love to hear from that as well. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, you're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
It probably differs a little bit within each phase. You know, offense may do just a little bit more or a little bit less one week, but, I mean, really we're hovering around 0-1, I would say, in particular in the first game, because I'm just a big believer in allowing these young players to play, not have to worry about, you know, the volume of a game plan, and we get a better feel for who they are as football players when we can just watch them react and play fast and not have to think. We'll move on from here and graduate a little bit, but even still, I mean, we don't do a lot. Every team's a little bit different. We don't do a lot as it relates to game planning in the preseason.
Buffalo Bills head coach Sean McDermott there in the postgame. My favorite answer he gave in the postgame. He talked for a good bit there, not anything crazy, but for a good bit. But I think it's also it's nice to hear a coach just outright say that. They don't game plan for every team. It is much more for the preseason about reacting and just, you know, being in the right spots, you know, when called upon, that kind of stuff. They are not going to be prepared for the ins and outs of what the Giants did last year. There simply is no point. The games don't matter, and to McDermott's point, they just want to see how guys are reacting. And I think you can put that to, you know, how bad they were on third downs and how they were a little shaky to start on offense. They're just kind of going out there and doing things. Now, he did say they'll graduate a little bit more, but even then it still won't be a ton.
It will still be about what I was saying. Can you get some athletic plays, some high point plays from players that you want to see promise from? Can you get, for example, in the film room, can I get Elijah Moore breaking open down the middle of the seam? Can I get TJ Sanders registering a couple quarterback hits, showing me that I've got a defensive lineman that can actually get home?
Yep.
Can I get Deion Walker with that fantastic inside move to then cause a pass deflection that, if it takes some fortunate bounce and the player sees it coming, that's a touchdown.
Yeah.
Can I get more plays from Jordan Hancock, like an interception like that, that it works great in the film room, just didn't translate to on the field because someone lined up incorrectly. But in the film room today, DBs, probably loving that one. Tip drill, go and get it. Make opportunities happen. That all has to do with reacting, making plays the way that you're able to.
803-0550, the number to call. Your thoughts on game number one of the preseason for the Bills. They do fall to the Giants 34-25. Next up for the Bills, it's going to be two straight road games. This week, it's Chicago on Sunday. It'll be a night game. The Bills will also be having a joint practice with the Bears later on this week. And let's get connected to our fans. That is brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Dan tweets in, and this is something we have not mentioned, and this is absolutely right. We got out without major injury. Nothing else really matters to me in the preseason.
And that's a big deal.
Yeah, that's probably one of the bigger ones, especially the Bills have been dealing with injuries, to some extent minor, maybe a little bit more than minor, throughout camp. And to come out of this with was Jenkins had a laceration, but he ultimately was able to come in. And then Taron Johnson ultimately just gets checked for a concussion. He's fine, and that's the extent of it? That's a pretty good day.
Especially considering we even took a call on it earlier. The Turf Monster was out and about on Saturday afternoon. Players are slipping, and he said the caller said, you know, that soft tissue injuries happen from those sorts of things. Not wrong.
That's why no one wants to play at MetLife.
Yeah.
That's why no one likes playing there. You want to talk about why Super Bowl's never gone back there. Maybe not the cold weather. It's the fact.
Oh, it's actually the field.
it might be the field, actually.
That's actually a really good point.
A bunch of people are like, absolutely not.
Yeah,
You get that baby cold? No.
Mm-mm. Yep.
And the way the Jets and Giants play, no one's played on that for also, a month and a half by the time the Super Bowl rolls around.
You can kind of say it about another stadium. It's domed, but like Detroit.
Detroit?
Detroit hasn't had one in a long time. You want to know why?
Could be the field.
Their turf monster.
Could actually be the field. Less so about the city, and they're more like, I'm not, no.
It's the field. The players don't want to play on that.
Yeah. You very rarely get major injuries in the Super Bowl. It, like, Odell Beckham Jr. is one that I think about. Like, he tears his ACL in the Super Bowl. Is it Greenlaw for the 49ers?
Dre Greenlaw, yeah.
Yep. Like, and that's kind of the only ones I can really think. I could be completely forgetting someone obvious, but those are the two that come to mind, and they're kind of the only ones in my mind. 803-0550, the number to call. Want to jump on the show today. One thing I do want to talk about, Derek, that does not part, you know, has nothing to do with the Bills, but I'm so fascinated by it. The Shedeur Sanders stuff.
Solid game.
I was locked in the entire time. I found myself getting really excited once he was named the starter, and then we found out he was going to play, you know, a good majority of the game because it was basically just him and Huntley. They were healthier and or were ever planning on playing. And he looked good. I'm not saying he looked great, but he looked comfortable. He made some really dynamic throws. His first touchdown pass was perfection. Second one, he's moving the pocket around. It looks good. It did not blow me away in terms of, like, guys, how's he not a first-round pick? Not that. And he had some, you know, goofy rookie mistakes, you know, the whole running backwards 15 yards.
Right.
You know, not great. But here. I'm going to go a long way in saying this. Let's say he puts another good preseason game together, or even just two. Like, he looks good the entire preseason. In all seriousness.
That chatter gets a lot louder.
And on this, though, what is the harm of playing him?
Well, at that point, you've won the job.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine that's how you sell it to the team, is he won the job.
He looks good. Well, and so that's the thing too. Like, I am going to be with great interest following Browns reporters of, like, okay, is now Flacco's first team reps starting to get split with Shedeur, or is, like, in any kind of capacity? They took two quarterbacks in this draft, Dylan Gabriel in the third, Shedeur in the fifth. Gabriel has not been able to play. He got the hamstring injury, so, like, we'll see if, you know, he himself could look great, and this conversation can go completely into the toilet.
Or it can go sideways on its head.
Right. But for me, in the way I look at it, and I'm always in some way looking at the marketability for any kind of move, it's why teams, no matter your draft position, if you're the first-round pick, they'll play over the sixth-round pick most of the time, unless, you know, desperate needs. The first-round player is marketable until they're not, right?
Right.
The Bills played Benford and Elam in the first game of the year out of necessity. But for many teams, Elam gets the first crack at this. Or the first-round pick gets the first crack at this.
The first-round pick does get the first crack at anything, no matter what it typically is. However, you're now looking at a player that was seen by some as a first-round pick, was annoyingly talked about through the entire weekend by a certain draft analyst.
Mel Kiper, I'll say it. Yeah, Mel Kiper.
But the thing is that there is actually legitimate hype around the player to a point where it matches almost a first or a second round pick, because that's where he was projected.
Mm-hmm.
Then he falls several rounds later.
And it almost felt deliberate by the NFL. At a certain point, it felt like they were trying to, like, teach a kid a lesson,
and
quote unquote.
I don't know what lesson has to be learned, but also, if this is how it goes and you win a job, there's a much different light about him all of a sudden, to where he is incredibly marketable all over again.
Mm-hmm.
Almost to a point of, teams, why did you do what you did?
Yeah, why did it take to the fifth round? And to some reports, an owner forcing his team to draft a guy. Now, they did actually trade up for him, so that's probably not true. But there was, I would imagine there were some rumblings of, Haslam likes the guy, we should go get him.
And at the same time, though, you're also a team that did it actively.
Mm-hmm.
You took a player that most people thought shouldn't even be touching the third round.
I mean, I think I mentioned it on air during the draft on day three. When we got around to the fifth round, I was like, I wouldn't be against the Bills in the sixth round swinging for
you. You and I got to that point.
Mainly because I think many people know how I feel about backup quarterbacks. I want at least some juice.
You want some fun.
I want some fun, but I want some juice too, because here, perfect example. Josh Allen doesn't play preseason game number one for the Bills, and I think we're heading towards he won't play game two or three.
Right. Again, but for the second straight year.
Yeah, but if they had Shedeur Sanders back there instead of Mitch Trubisky or Mike White playing a majority of the snaps in the first half, and he completes the Tyrell Shavers pass, or he does hit Elijah Moore and it's a touchdown, what have you. All of a sudden, that's what I've been talking about, the trade piece.
Mm-hmm.
And he would play all three preseason games.
Tanner McKee.
Tanner McKee for the Eagles. Far less interesting, but around NFL circles, I know Jordan Schultz has tweeted about this, there is a lot of love there with him.
Even less so. Joe Milton, last year.
Oh, man. That's,
who is now almost becoming a bit of a Bills folk hero of sorts.
He's also a meme, but yeah, he's a bit of a folk hero.
Thank you for making sure the Patriots did not get either Travis Hunter nor Abdul Carter. Thank you. Really. Or a bunch of picks and still landing one of those two, actually.
Yeah.
So thank you for that. Really appreciate that one, Joe Milton. Thank you for your service.
Man, he's Nolan Ryan at quarterback. Did you see any of the highlights from him with Dallas? No touch.
He rockets everything.
Just, I mean, fireball, fastball. He's a Aroldis Chapman, Nolan Ryan at quarterback. It's unbelievable to watch.
Yeah.
I mean, he's raw.
Yeah. And
what's funny is then the action that got everyone excited about him was last year's preseason and then his final game against Buffalo. And then with Dallas, their first preseason game, you're like, oh, this is not.
Wait, they traded for this?
This is not great.
Yeah.
It's not awesome.
You traded for all fastballs all the time?
Yeah, but the Sanders stuff, for me, it very quickly becomes, if he is solid in the preseason, you are a team that does not have high expectations. No matter what you're going to say internally, there are likely not high expectations.
Right.
You have a 41-year-old starting quarterback, and it's Joe Flacco. The expectations can only get so high. I feel this way in almost every sport, and I know the old adage used to be the opposite. I don't believe that. If it's close to a tie or a tie between the vet and the rookie, I favor the rookie every single time. And it becomes more aggressive at the quarterback position. I need them to have reps. I need to know as soon as humanly possible if I can start moving forward with them. And for Cleveland especially, you drafted two of them in the third and the fifth round, Dylan Gabriel, Shedeur Sanders. If you're bad this year, you need to know did we just get Dak Prescott or Russell Wilson in the later rounds of the draft? And we don't have to use maybe the second overall pick on a Cade Klubnik, a Drew Aller, whoever ends up becoming one of these quarterbacks. You need to know.
Especially because you have two. But the problem with that is also going to be you have two of them.
Yeah.
Are you going to move on too quickly from one to get to the other?
Right. But this is where also your best ability is your availability. Shedeur was not getting, at least from most reports that I was seeing, a ton of reps to the point where there was kind of a ridiculous story of are the Browns trying to tank him, essentially. Yeah. But Gabriel picks up a hamstring. It sucks. But Shedeur took advantage. Pickett's banged up. Pickett, number one, I think most of us assumed would just not be on the roster. They would roll with Flacco and the two rookies. But now maybe they don't.
I wasn't thinking that. I was thinking that Cleveland probably takes Pickett, Flacco, and...
Oh, and one of the rookies.
And one of the rookies, and you practice squad the other, based on who it might be.
With the hope and prayer that one of them isn't picked up.
Yeah. Because... why would you? Especially if camp was going the way that it was. Sanders isn't even getting a lot of opportunity. What are you really losing?
Yeah, and if he gets picked up, it's like, okay, cool. Now he's like somebody else's problem.
But now Sanders is getting this opportunity, and he's earning the right to make it a conversation. On a roster where if you have six quarterbacks, you have no quarterbacks.
They do have six. Oh, my goodness. They do have six. That's right.
That is the other thing about this opportunity that is really going to become more and more interesting throughout the preseason.
How do you even divvy up reps? I mean, how do you even do that?
And, well, one of them is out for, you know.
But then it's down to five guys, and it's the same question.
It's the same thing. That's why Sanders isn't getting reps. And they signed the extra one, by the way, because there's injuries.
Yeah, there's two injuries.
So they were already in a mess with reps. What do you do now if people start getting healthy? Well, my first answer is you cut Huntley.
Oh, yeah.
But my second one is, what do I do about Flacco, even. If Sanders looks like this, do I bother trotting a 41-year-old quarterback out there?
No, and that's my whole point. What am I learning here? My team might win seven games, cool, with Flacco, great. But with Sanders, they might also win seven games. But it could save jobs. There could be a little hope in the city. You'll be relevant in Cleveland, and you're not good. Like that's a thing I think Buffalo fans could intimately understand, is that when small market teams are bad, even in the NFL, you are a forgotten kid at the bus stop. I mean, you're there, sure, but no one cares.
No one cares.
Detroit, for a long time, just happy to be an NFL franchise. Jacksonville, we're just happy the franchise is still here. Buffalo, we're just happy the franchise is still here. Cleveland, to that extent, because they also were moved once, but they had a little blip of a moment where they were really interesting in the recent years. Then Baker's you know, then they move off of Baker. They do the Watson thing. That's a disaster.
And now they've got six quarterbacks on the roster.
Yeah, this could be a way of, like, good vibes around them. I know Shador's not the most overly popular player. Again, we kind of bashed him a little bit during our draft coverage as well for how he handled the pre-draft process.
It was more of a mystery of what did you do?
What did you do? How bad could it have been? But again, me, who is not the biggest Shador Sanders fan, was locked into a preseason game because he was playing.
And it is generating a different kind of hype, too. I think that's the other part of this, is that now you're also going to look at the teams that didn't take him and go, okay, what did you miss on? How did you miss on them like this? Because if New Orleans trots Spencer Rattler out there week one as a starter,
it's looking like they're going to.
And Cleveland has Shador Sanders starting, you look at Mickey Loomis and go, how do you still have a job?
Well, and so to that point, New Orleans isn't necessarily a small market, but they can be a forgettable franchise when they're bad. They were bad for most of their lives up until Breeze and Peyton. And instead they take Tyler Shuck in the second round. It's looking like he won't even win the QB competition.
Which, great pick there, guys.
And with New Orleans especially, too, you could have taken Sanders, still been bad, but at least been relevant for a while.
You could have been relevant at least for the year while being bad.
Yeah. And instead, now you're not even that, really. And who is Tyler Shuck except for a 25-year-old that had one good year of college football, and that was the end of his college football career?
Yeah.
And then now, in preseason, in training camp as well, it does not sound like he's having a good camp. He was fine in a preseason game. He had a pick six and a touchdown. But
his most notable thing was that he held out with the rest of the second rounders looking for guaranteed money.
Yeah, because the assumption was he'll be the starter. And
yeah.
Now here we are. I look at it, and it's a lot of fun at the idea of, after all of this, Sanders actually maybe the more, I don't say logical start, because that is probably not true. The more logical one, if you want to win games, is probably 41-year-old Joe Flacco. But with the assumption that they won't be very good, they probably won't win games, it would be better to, let's see what we have in Sanders.
If you want to operate the season on what do you have in Sanders, you can then look at it as, hey, I got Flacco as my backup in case things are turning sour.
Yep.
You know, it's our safe option, or you can just roll with Pickett. That's when you get to, if Sanders wins the job, then you're rolling with two rookies and one of those vets, not both.
Yeah.
If Sanders continues to play well. If he doesn't, that's when I think you're probably trying to, honestly, you're probably cutting ties with your third rounder now.
Right, and look, that's its own thing.
That's its own asset mismanagement, but
I mean, I remember the Raiders did that a few years ago. Lynn Bowden Jr.,
yep.
Third-round pick. They caught him in camp, and I think Miami picks him up and had never been heard of again. But it also wouldn't be – you picked a quarterback that was going to be a backup in the third round. Like, that's already not the best asset management.
It's already
in the world.
Bad asset management in a deep defensive class.
Yeah, and where you also kind of just need talent everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's already not great asset management. Doing it twice is almost malpractice. So – maybe ultimately, to a certain extent, one of them has to get cut. Just as we've mentioned, they've got five quarterbacks on the roster. When the season rolls around, Watson's really not a part of it, so it's going to be four, maybe three.
And you avoid the moving on from one of the players' evaluation too quickly to just look to see if you have something in the other.
Yeah.
Why not give a full season to that player instead, release the other one, cut bait, and then you get answers.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, based on what I know with the draft profile of Dylan Gabriel, move on from the third round pick.
Yeah, there's going to be people that love Gabriel. I don't understand it. If the Bills had drafted Gabriel and people wanted to push that was, hey, it's exciting. No,
yeah,
it's not.
They drafted
Jake
the quarterback.
Fromm. It's Jake Fromm. There's no upside here.
But
he played a lot of college football. There's no elite athletic trait. There's no elite trait outside of he played a lot of college football. Sanders at least has a very good arm. He's athletic enough, actually. Like, I walked away from that going, okay, there's escapability there. And he also played a lot of college football.
I'll take a moment real quick to get connected with our fans. Brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Mike D. tweeting in, and I really like this. You keep Flacco to teach the rookie quarterbacking the NFL. Just like the Bills did with Josh, it's smart to have a guy teach the QB role outside of the game itself. Good on Sanders for playing so good.
I will say on Flacco, though, and Mike may not have seen this clip.
That's right.
Flacco was asked about this.
Flacco does not care to do it.
Pretty much outright said, I'm not here to be a teacher. I'm here to play quarterback and to win games. I'm paraphrasing it. This is not an exact quote. This is from this is back in, I think, mandatory minicamp.
Yep.
But he kind of pushed back on that. Now, to that extent, though, for many of us, sometimes the best teacher is just watching somebody do something. I mean, we hear quarterbacks talk about that all the time, just watching another guy and how they operate.
Yes.
In college, we hear that all the time. That could absolutely be it. And that could be the kind of teacher Flacco
is. Might
not
be actively teaching, but he may be doing it passively, and Sanders is trying to be a good student, for example.
And he is.
That is a good thing. I start to wonder, though, the viability of why the heck are you going to bother keeping a guy who, A, won't actively teach to see if you've got something in the commodity that you drafted that is earning his way up the depth chart.
Yep.
And B, has no long-term standing in the National Football League.
Yeah.
I do like the premise of the tweet overall, though, but like...
I think it's the perfect world. That's what you're hoping for.
Yes, but
that's what you're hoping for.
But also, Joe Flacco signed here with no intention of being a backup.
No.
He probably would say, if I don't have the job, cut me.
To be fair, look how Cleveland's treating it. Cleveland is treating it as he's our starter. Why would we? He's not going to play the preseason. He's going to get all the first team. He's going to start week one.
Which I think is a mistake.
Now, I do wonder, and this is another thing too, and to get back to Bills Giants a little bit here. Do we know how safe Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry's job is? And so on that, and it's the same with the Giants. We kind of know Dable and Shane's job in New York is probably not safe for either of them, especially after the hard knock stuff, especially after making the playoffs, winning a game, cratering hard. That's where I go to then play the rookie. I think it is one of the worst things an ownership group can do is firing a coach the year after a rookie plays, because I'll always say, fire a coach and then bring in the rookie.
You want to start together. That's kind
of. You have to start together or at least get close to that. The worst thing the Bears could have done for Caleb Williams
was let Eberflus
take him. Was keeping Eberflus in his rookie year. You should have fired the coach, got a coach early, and build towards taking Caleb Williams. Whoever you wanted to. The worst thing you can do is changing coaches. It's also somewhat of a negative for Drake May. You had Jerod Mayo, now you got Vrabel. Now I think pretty much unanimously believe Vrabel is going to be better than Mayo. So that may be a positive there.
But you do need to be careful on the, did he come here just because he wanted to be back in the Patriots organization, or is he actually sold on Drake May?
Or is he actually sold?
There's going to be a little bit of a problem, maybe a kickback on that sort of thing. Miami does this to a Tagovailoa, where Brian Flores effectively keeps benching him.
Yeah, it saves his career, actually.
And the thing about it is, Flores then leaves. You need to make sure you get a coach that wants the player.
Mm-hmm.
And McDaniel does seem to want the player. As a matter of fact, the system seems to really fall off the ledge when Tua is not in the lineup.
It seems like it relies on Tua being the quarterback.
It relies on Tua being the quarterback. It plays to his strengths, actually. But if you don't do that, Tua, A, doesn't get his extension, but B, Miami's already moving on.
Mm-hmm. Now, moving on from a coach in year 2-3 of a rookie quarterback or a young quarterback is fine. I mean that very sensitive period of it's your first full offseason now of being the guy, and we're going to take everything away. Because very rarely is any of the coaching staff staying if the head coach is fired. It's going to be like a new staff entirely. The team did not draft you. They are probably not going to be married to you. And it's so early in your development that you needed the comfort from the team, but you needed to know you're going to be the guy, that everything's around you, they are building toward you. The Bears have tried to do that, even with Eberflus. We'll see how that goes. But to the Giants and Cleveland's point too, not knowing how safe either Stefanski or Dable are, it's where if I'm a Giants fan, after one game, I am probably pushing harder for Jackson Dart. And internally, there is probably a feeling of we need to start the kid as fast as possible. Because even if we're bad, we can argue. And to a certain extent, successfully, we're building with the rookie quarterback. We're building for our future. And if Dart shows you anything positive, and he did on Saturday,
he did,
you go with him over Russell Wilson.
Even Tennessee is not safe from this. They take Ward first overall. I don't know if Callahan's made for this.
No idea. Look, but, you know, and to a certain extent.
Say the Titans have another terrible season.
Yeah.
It's not a zero chance that they fire him, too.
Yeah. But even with Cleveland, Baker Mayfield, Freddie Kitchens.
Yep.
And the Hugh Jackson stuff there. It's one of the worst things you can do. It's a lot like a marriage trying to save itself by having a baby. It's one for one for me. the marriage is a disaster, but we think a kid's going to save it. It almost never does. My coach is a disaster. We're not going anywhere, but we're going to take a young quarterback. This is going to save us. It very rarely works.
Right.
There are the exceptions that just they hit. They're perfect. The number one overall pick. What have you?
Right.
But there are more often than not, it's we're in a really bad situation, and now we're just drowning, and we maybe have just ruined a career as well to try to save ours. 803-0550, the number to call. We'll get back to Bills and Giants after this quick timeout, read some of your tweets, and also get your thoughts on the phone on what you thought of game number one of the Bills preseason. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, and this is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, hanging with you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, which, of course, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at Northtown.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Auto.com. Week one of the preseason is behind us.
How you feeling, everybody? And I think it's mostly... I do like the consistent messaging that we've been getting, though, from the couple callers that we've taken today, which is, I know it is preseason. Mm-hmm. I do have some things on my mind that are kind of troubling me, but I'm not going over the cliff right now, which is exactly how you should feel if you have negatives on it. If you have positives, you need to say the same thing, which is, it's one preseason game. Let's see if it's strung together. Like the Shooter Sanders thing we were talking about.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's one preseason game. He could be chunkage throughout the rest of this, and like it's all for naught.
Yeah, so it really was just a week of talking points, a week of excitement, and that's it, right? It could absolutely happen.
Yeah.
I will tell you, though, this is where I prefer the college route, where it's peak paranoia, no one knows anything until like week one. I love that stuff, where the most you'll get is reports from internally of their camps of like, oh, I really like this player. Everyone thought Florida State was great last year based off the internal dialogue that everyone was getting. There were no preseason games to see if DJ Ungalele was any good or if their defense had retooled or not. There was nothing. There was absolutely nothing. And we're going to get the AP poll today. That is coming out, I think, at noon today. We already got the coaches poll, what have you.
Right.
We'll know who the top 25 are. There will be a team in there, probably more than one. That are garbage.
And they're like, hang on, you're not supposed to
that
be
are,
here.
That do not meet the expectations they out. Had. But a lot of those expectations happen because there's absolutely nothing you can learn. For like a month and a half,
there's no
preseason. It is zero dark 30. You get very few reports. Everything is behind closed doors. And you just hope and pray the information you got is somewhat correct.
I do love that,
It is so good.
I do love the mystery.
Now, I will say, it does lead to some week one games being disasters. A few years ago, Alabama played USC. This is right before Sam Darnold starts. He ends up starting later that year, and they end up actually going on to the Rose Bowl. But they play Alabama in Dallas. It was one of those neutral site games. It's a blowout. It's horrendous.
Yep.
A few years ago as well, Alabama, Michigan, Denard Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. Disaster. You have those games. But you will also have the surprise teams that catch everyone. Arizona State last year. They were picked last in the Big 12. They win the darn thing.
Yeah.
They look, hook 'em horns, baby. They had them dead to right.
Yeah, they did. They were getting...
Texas has to score on a fourth down.
Yes, they did make it a little scary in that game. And I will say, though, it's always fun to have the mystery, though. I love mystery.
Love mystery.
Mystery is fun. Mystery and intrigue are always fun, especially if you don't see other teams. And
Cold
like,
War paranoia, baby.
Yes. How good are you really? How good are we really? Like, it's
what information do you believe? What's being fed to you? It's the best.
Yeah, it's kind of like it's kind of fun. I do kind of want that for the NFL, mostly because I don't know the appetite of a 2-game preseason, for example. If the NFL moves to its 18th game, which they desperately want,
yeah, we kind of know that is coming.
It's going to have to come with the trade-off of the entire preseason. Because who's going to care about 2 preseason games? I'll tell you who won't. NFL teams.
You wonder though if owners will still want that one, because that's the thing. It's going to be split. You'll have one home, one
NFL
away.
NFL owners and NFL teams are probably the difference in this.
Is that we want that coaching one more staffs, game.
Coaching staffs do not care. They it's not that they don't care. It's that they don't want to worry too much about it because it's bland planning and it's looking at the depth of your team. It's not it's the starters
much,
at that point.
And it's too much chaos.
And with only two games, you're either playing the starters in the first one or you're not at all. Done.
Yep.
We're done with the conversation at that point. With 90 players, what is the point?
Yeah.
And the NFLPA would push back on reducing training camp roster sizes.
And that's the big negative of that, though, isn't it? I mean, like the preseason, having three of them, there will be guys who are just simply not NFL roster players.
They are camp bodies.
But they can get on camp, and then they can play in some of these games. A lot of these are on NFL Network, so it's to a certain extent national television. Like, they get their moments. Here, a perfect example, too, as well. We're talking about Sanders there. Who would know anything good about Shedeur Sanders up to this point if it weren't for he played a preseason game? He wasn't getting any reps. On the Bills, Tyrell Shavers. It would just be camp. And you know, you can differentiate, you can separate yourself from others in practice too, but we've mentioned you sort of have to marry the two between the preseason games and practice. Now, if it just goes to practice, or likely what would start to happen, I think, in earnest, is what the Bills are going to be doing this week, which is the joint practices.
I think here, Steven Gosnell. That's camp body.
Yeah.
He makes a fun little catch in practice because there were so many injuries to wide receiver. Mm-hmm. But other than that, you don't suspect he's going to make a roster.
Or last year. Andreessen.
Right.
He's now there. He's now seemingly in pole position to be their backup middle linebacker. But if fans only know he's on the roster and there's only – and I think this does play a little bit of a role in it. Only a little bit of noise because we're not seeing him all the time. Really what I think for most of us got to he should be on the roster was last year's Pittsburgh game.
And Christian Wilkerson.
Mm-hmm.
Wilkerson has a ultimately incomplete catch because he's out of bounds.
Boy, did that look good. Yeah, one-hand catch on the sideline. It's good in college, not so good in the NFL and in high school. But
yeah, right. It's high school. You need 2 feet
yeah,
in two.
I'll never.
And college is like, no, we're going to stay with one. What do you mean?
Yeah,
fix
I'll
it.
Never.
At
I'll
this
never
point,
like
fix
that.
It. It's not. It gets the players to not have to worry about adjusting at that point.
Yeah, it's kind of bogus.
It's kind of ridiculous. It's very bogus. But players like that though. And if you're not going to have three preseason games, if it goes down to two, I look at it as a coaching staff and going, why am I wasting my time with 90 players?
Like, what am I doing here?
What am I doing here?
I can just be getting ready for week one. I mean, college.
They're just preparing
for
week
one. They spend 3 months getting ready for the week one opponent. Ohio State and Texas have been spending too long getting ready for each other.
Which is kind of hilarious if a team puts up a dud on in week one like that, because like
I think
okay,
for me it also proves just how good the other team was. I think that's always how I've taken it, is that it's like, okay, we've now figured out the talent issue. Like one team is going to be better than the other. But
I think that's the case in college. But like in the NFL, if I'm a coach, I'm not wanting to have to worry about this. I want to just get to game planning at that point.
Which makes complete sense to McDermott's point, too, of like we don't game plan for specific teams. Why waste the time?
Why waste the time? And
especially
if you
have Baltimore week one, that's your start of the season?
If you only have two preseason games, what is it that is going to benefit at that point? Who really benefits from this? And the answer only is the pocketbooks.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
But coaches and even like your top-end roster players – why are you here?
I think we kind of found that out in 2020 when there was no preseason because of the pandemic. Defenses struggled a little bit in the first month. There was a lot of high scoring. I remember. I don't know the exact stats, but I remember that was a big thing. A lot of scoring. Offenses were on fire, the whole thing. But ultimately, we all kind of figured out in 2020, we don't really need the preseason. Camp, practicing, getting reps in practice, like, that's where it matters, the nitty-gritty. The behind closed doors things. That's really what matters. And the preseason, is to sell tickets. And to that point as well, we brought this up on pregame on Saturday, it's a cheaper way for families to go. We mentioned that.
Yes.
And you know, it's the last game at Highmark Stadium. It was a chance for families to go and to enjoy the afternoon and maybe not stay the entire time. That's the thing, too. There's no stress to it.
Yeah, you don't have to stay the whole game.
If the kiddos are tired because it's 90 degrees outside and you're baking in the sun, It's all good. Who cares if the game is close? It doesn't count. And so like, I guess that would maybe be my one continuous push to have the preseason, as much as I don't really like it, is that it is a cheaper way for families to go, and I still want that to be available.
I still want that to be available too, which is why take as long as you need to with that 18th game.
Yep. 803-0550, the number to call. Your thoughts on game number one of the preseason. Another tweet in here. Frank, D-line not getting home, getting stood up, stood straight up, and Daquan Jones just taking up a bit of a roster spot here. You know, the Daquan Jones thing, I still want him on the roster because I don't know what I'm going to get from the rookies right away. I just don't, and I don't want to have to rely on them immediately.
If Ogunjobi wasn't suspended, sure.
But that's the thing. You're going to need him because I don't know what I'm getting the rookies, and the body count will be low, not due to injuries, due to suspensions, but the D-line, again, there were flash plays, and there were. Deion Walker had a very good PFF grade, and to be fair, every time he was in, you saw something. The Dancing Bear comp was on full display. He looked awesome. But in 51 pass attempts, the Bills registered zero sacks. I watched an uncomfortable amount of Chicago and Miami yesterday. Zach Wilson was sacked 4 times.
Is that also... Here I am about to trash Miami's O-line, and it's not like the Giants are known for their offensive line prowess.
And it's not like they were trouting out their prime Russell Wilson, or that Tommy DeVito and Jameis Winston are these nimble athletes that just, man, they're escape artists. Johnny Manziel learned from them. No. And so that is something, too. Again, the flash plays were there, but that is something, even in the preseason, I do think Bills fans are going to need to see. I know I'll need to see, is that they are starting to get home. Like 2 years ago, they were one of like the top 5 units in terms of sack numbers. I think last year they were middle of the pack. It was a steep drop off.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a big part of it too, because their pressure numbers were better than the Eagles in the regular season. Their QB hit numbers were pretty darn good. I brought this up with Greg Rousseau. He's top 10 in most of those categories.
And then when it mattered most.
But in sacks, he's like 28th. And he led the team in sacks at 8.
And again, when it mattered most, mm-hmm. the last time the fans saw the Buffalo Bills play football.
Yeah, Rousseau was sort of not just a non-factor, a bit of a negative factor, especially in terms of how he set the run.
And that was your best pass rusher.
Mm-hmm. And so I think that is absolutely going to be something. It's a minor thing, because how much can you really take from the preseason? We've talked that to death.
And on the other
side, of seeing Javon Salman get home, Alandon Jackson get home, TJ Sanders register a sack, or Bosa, you know, that's kind of, you know, not to necessarily the money and the term, but he is sort of your big addition of, he's going to be the guy that helps us unlock more of Greg Rousseau. He is himself going to help us down the line.
And Bosa was one of the things you could actually take away that was a positive in that game.
Yeah.
So the small snap shares for the starters is also something about it too. But you want to see your depth actually do something, because that's what's rotating in.
Mm-hmm.
You want to see them playing against backups and making plays themselves. And if they're not, are we in for more of the painful stuff that we had this past year, which is a middle-of-the-pack passing rush that does not ultimately get home when it matters most?
Yep. And that's the thing. Like, depth is all fine and dandy until it's bad depth. Like, I look at the Eagles in both their Super Bowls and what they were able to do on the defensive line. It's all good depth. I mean, this is why guys like Milton, I'm blanking on his first name, he gets a big contract after the Super Bowl. Josh Sweat gets a big contract after the Super Bowl. His pressure numbers weren't right. Greg Rousseau's. Sack numbers were. Sack numbers were better.
Because he's getting to there at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
You do have to be able to finish plays. Like even TJ Sanders with that hit on Dart.
It's a nice play to see, and I'm excited to see it.
It's a nice first look.
Mm-hmm.
But when the snaps get real and the score is kept for real, you need to get home.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number to call. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, here until 12 o'clock, where Sabres Live will take over. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Quick final segment here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on a beautiful Monday. Sabres Live coming up at the top of the hour. And today's show, of course, is brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. In the break there, had a lot of fun for 5 minutes going through Well, the difference from this year to last year in terms of these sack numbers for the Bills, in 2023, the Bills ranked fourth in sack numbers, if we're just looking at that. Baltimore is first at 60, Buffalo is fourth at 54. This year, it is a stark difference. They are in the bottom third at 39 sacks. That is a big drop-off in that. However, Derek, what is interesting, 2023, their pressure numbers, 158. This past year, their pressure numbers, 151. Pressure percentage, 23.6 last year. 2023, it's 24.4. It's not radically different.
Right.
The difference is the sack numbers, the finishing. And I wonder if that's a mix of guys not getting home, guys not finishing, but also, and we got here as we're talking to the break, I wonder how much of that is also the coverage and marrying the defense together.
Context.
Yeah. Last year, Rasul Douglas was not the Rasul Douglas they traded for. Elam very much could not play for them.
Where and you're relying on more of the depth at that point.
In 2023, Douglas was awesome for you. Benford had a little bit of a breakout. You had all of Terrell Bernard. Your safeties were better than last year.
You had you didn't have all of Matt Milano.
No. But Bernard, as a middle linebacker, coverage middle linebacker, very good.
But that's also, on the other side of it, though, Leonard Floyd is there 2 years ago. And he casually gives you another good season. He's quietly one of the best, best in terms of consistency for his career. Ed Oliver has a precipitous drop in his game.
He went from, I believe it was 9.5 sacks to 3. There was a drop-off there.
It's a massive drop-off already to where you get to, you're not finishing plays. Coverage is part of that, though, too. How much off are they playing? How much is it that they try to play more man coverage with a starting corner that is never a good fit for that?
Mm-hmm.
And how much of it is also safety play?
I mean, that's
two years ago.
That might be, especially looking at the Bills' defense, that might be the biggest part of it.
2 years ago, you have legitimate threats on the back end, all pro threats on the back end.
Mm-hmm.
And then last year, you're trotting out, and it's nothing against them, but it is hard to follow up Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer with Damar Hamlin and Taylor Rapp.
Yep. It's we all knew it was a difference, and maybe that's the difference.
It's a tall task.
They give up the big play every now and then here, you know, more than we're used to, but it also could be the ball gets out that second quicker because there is an opening, where before, I can't fit that into that window. That's going to be a pass breakup. It's got to be an interception. He's not open. We're now, guy's open.
Guy's open, ball's out. I don't care if there's a guy in my face.
Now, with the additions of everything they've done in the DB room, on both sides, safety and corner, and the, six additions they've made on the defensive line, maybe you do get a Leonard Floyd season out of Joey Bosa. Or you just get better all-around seasons from everybody. You added T.J. Sanders, you added Deion Walker, A.J. Epinesa, Greg Rousseau, of course, is the guy I kind of banged the drum a lot for, at least recently.
But those are your holdovers at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Epinesa, Solomon, and of course, Rousseau. Other than that, the position has been overhauled.
Yeah.
Defensive tackle. It's what? It's Daquan Jones and Ed Oliver, and that's it. You revamped the entire room.
Mm-hmm.
Corner. You get rid of two players. And you bring in a bunch of names, and you focus on that in the draft.
Yeah. Also could say, too, the blitz percentage did change pretty aggressively. 2023, the Bills blitzed at a percentage of 23.5%. Last year, dropped down to 19.1%.
Also, you do sometimes blitz because the defensive line's not getting home.
Right, right.
So it is something where you do want to create pressure.
Fun context there. It is going to be the major storyline for, I think, the Bills this year is, do they get more from that revamped defensive line? That'll do it today for me and Derek. Coming up next, some hockey talk with Sabres Live. You're listening to WGR.